Welcome to Keep Calm. We would love for you to join us on Fridays from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. For more information, check out our website at www.faithwalking.com, where you can scroll down to the Spaces for Wholeness Groups section and click on Keep Calm. You can also email us at info@faithwalking.us.
Ever since February 6th, we have been talking about Epiphany and the celebration of Epiphany. And I have one more point to make on the subject, and then I think I'll be done. Okay. So Epiphany, a part of the celebration of Epiphany, as I'm learning about Epiphany personally, is the coming of the Magi to welcome Jesus. And if you haven't been here, a little bit of background just to remind you, the Magi are wise men, religious leaders, astronomers and astrologists from Persia, and more than likely from what we know today as Iran. So imagine, and the religion was Zoroastrianism. So imagine these wise, religious astronomers. They recognized the prophecy in the stars, and they come to celebrate the birth of Jesus. And one of the things that I highlighted last time was, and it's shocking to me that they came from Iran to welcome and celebrate the birth of Christ, and the Jewish wise men and religious scholars didn't even leave Jerusalem to come welcome Jesus. And just the dichotomy of that, whatever. One of the main ideas of the celebration of Epiphany is this idea, and I want to say it this way. So Magi from the East, Magi from Persia, Magi from Iran were included in the Christmas invitation. So when the invitations get sent out, come welcome the birth of Christ, these Iranian religious leaders from a different religion were invited. And they came. And I think one of the big ideas here, and I say it this way, inclusion is in God's design. Inclusion is in God's design. That's what I believe. Now, it's interesting that the Jewish religion from which Jesus was birthed was exclusive by design. But I'm convinced that God's intention is for there to be inclusion. I don't know all the ins and outs of that. I don't know all the parameters of that. So who's included and who's excluded? What I believe is God's hope is to include everybody. I could go to John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And so these outsiders were included in the invitation and welcomed and celebrated. It's also fascinating to me that then when those outsiders of a different religion headed home, they heard from God in a dream, just like Joseph heard from God in a dream. And God spoke to them and told them to go home a different way. And so I have heard, remember, my first formation is from a really conservative side of the Christian house. And in my first formation, I've heard people say, well, God doesn't hear the prayer of a non-believer. Well, what about this story? So God spoke to people of a different religion, and I do not believe that they went back to Iran and became followers of Jesus in the way that we interpret being followers of Jesus. And so I'm wondering, okay, so what does the inclusion mean? Why were they included? I also then want to just be blunt and straight and plain, because it's concerning for me that we in the West, so I primarily know my context here in the US better than the UK, but we in the West, which would include the UK, it seems like we have this terrible propensity to exclude rather than include. And we have this terrible propensity to exclude anybody that doesn't look like us, talk like us, and believe like us. The way I would say it from an American perspective, and it seems like that a large amount of the political angst in our country today is about excluding people that aren't like us. So if I'm not white, and if I'm not Christian, and if I'm not American, then I get excluded. Or maybe we'd broaden that a little and say, if I'm not white and I'm not a part of the Christian church somewhere, and if I'm not an ally of America, then I get excluded. And it seems like so much of our arguing and fighting is about excluding people rather than including people. I hope you'll go, I hope your friends of Faith Walking on Facebook, because I posted a quote that I'll read here in a moment from Walter Brueggemann that I think really addresses that. And if I could take a little parenthesis. So we have a guy here, the Kleinberg Institute at Rice University here in Houston, that does a study every year. And the numbers I'm going to quote you, if I quote any, are from 2013. So it's been a number of years since these were there. But Kleinberg's study says that in America, the demographics of America are changing because of the Voter Rights Bill of 1965. That opened immigration to non-European people. And that before 1965, 85 to 90% of all the immigrants that came to the U.S. were European descent. And that since 1965, the vast majority of the immigrants to the U.S. are non-European descent. And so it's only reasonable to believe that, okay, here we are, however many that would be, 1965 is what, 57 years ago? Is that accurate? Is my math right? That we would be having struggles in America about who's going to run the country and what color they need to be to run the country or to lead us or to whatever. And I want to tie it all the way to the story of the Magi and say, I think in God sending the Magi, God was saying, I'm an inclusive God. And that one of the roles of Christ followers is the role of hospitality. And hospitality is two Greek words, philoxenos, Xenos being the stranger, philo being the Greek word for brotherly love. So you put the two words together, have brotherly love for people not like you. And for me, as we celebrate Epiphany, and as we celebrate the coming of the Magi, we're celebrating the inclusion of God. That God includes people that are different than us, and that God invites us as his followers to welcome people into our lives, not just our country, but into our lives who are different from us on yesterday or the day before. I think it was the day before. I was outside covering all my plants. And one of my neighbors who lives a block up and down the street from me is of Asian ancestry. I'm not sure if she's Chinese or what. So I'll just say she's a, and she walks her dog regularly and we speak, but I've not even met her and know her name. And 2 days ago, she stops because I'm out by the edge of the road, the street, covering my plants up out there. And she asks, and she gives me, she said, I'd like to give you a gift. And she hands me this. And she said, would you take good luck for the Lunar New Year? So if you know anything about Chinese culture, Chinese New Year was celebrated just a couple of days ago. And she gave me this thing that's in the bag here. And I'm going to open it with y'all because I haven't opened it before. Yeah. One of these for good luck. And you might say, well, hang on just a second. That's not Christian. No, it isn't. You know what she did after she gave it to me? I slipped it in my pocket because I'm outside working. And the first thing she said was, please don't throw it away. And I said, I promise you, I am not going to throw it away because I could use some good luck in 2022. And, you know, I don't know what you believe about luck, folks. We could say, well, there is no luck. We believe in God's providence. Okay, well, this is a symbol of God's providence for my life. I can make it mean whatever I want. But my point is, so it reminded me of two things. One is me taking the gift from her is hospitality. Me not throwing it away is hospitality. But it also reminds me that there's a woman who lives down my street who I don't even know her name, who's from a different culture and a different religion, evidently, who I need to get to know. Not necessarily so I can convert her to Christ, but just so I can get to know my neighbor and I can love her well, because for me, that's what hospitality is. How do I love like a brother the stranger who lives right down the street from me? I think that's what Epiphany is about. It's a reminder to love your neighbor. It's a reminder to love people that are different than you are. Yeah, let me give you just a little bit more. Y'all got room for a little more? So I'm going to read you this Walter Brueggemann quote. It's out of a book called A Gospel of Hope. And it's a little complex, and it's on our Facebook page, at website, and it's on my personal Facebook page if you want it. But here it is. Here's what Brueggemann says. The world is not hospitable, but really wants to expel all of those that are unlike us, so that nations keep producing refugees of those who need to be expelled. And we get very nervous about immigrants among us. Those unlike us threaten us. And Christians are called in such a world to extend hospitality. I thought that was so powerful. We are not hospitable. We are threatened by people that are different from us. And I think, folks, we're not as much threatened by the color of skin as we are the culture that they bring. We're threatened by cultures that are different than ours. So, inclusion is what we celebrate at Epiphany. And I want to share one final story. This story is found in a book called Red Letter Christians. It's written by Tony Campolo and the young guy, I can't remember his name at the moment.
Shane Claiborne.
Thank you so very much. And in it, Campolo tells a story of being at the Urbana Missions Conference in 1987. As I'm looking around the room, I think most of us were born in before 1987. Some of us barely. We do have a couple of youngins in our midst. But in 1987, Billy Graham, whatever you believe about Billy Graham, is sharing the story about visiting a monastery in China. And of course, he's there to evangelize. And he goes into the monastery and he notices a particular monk over in the corner who really is intensely praying. And Billy Graham goes over and he begins to pray for the monk as the monk is praying. And when the monk gets done praying, through the interpreter, Billy Graham begins to tell him how impressed he was by his fervency. And then he shares from Billy Graham's perspective, Jesus with him. Okay, whatever that means. And then, and as he's sharing it, tears start to roll down the monk's eyes. And so Billy Graham is thinking, man, he's there. And through the interpreter, he says, would you like to invite Jesus into your heart? And the monk's reply was, inviting him into my heart, I don't need to invite him into my heart. He's already in my heart. I just didn't know what his name was. I don't know what all that means. But what I believe it means is God's up to things that are bigger than we are up to most of the time. That God's broader, that God's more inclusive, that what we believe in missional theology is that God is at work in the world in ways that we don't even know. And I think the final thing I want to leave you with is through this story of the Magi who came to worship at the feet of Jesus or acknowledge who he was, God is saying, don't be so exclusive that you exclude people that I love. And I think the other thing I would say is, and as followers of Jesus, we are called to be people of hospitality. And one of the things I think that this stirs in me and that I just want to invite you to ponder or consider with me, and who is it in 2022 that I need to be hospitable toward? What one person might I begin a relationship with in 2022 that I haven't had a relationship with before that's different than I am? Every head bowed, every eye closed. Yeah, I'm done. What's that stir up for you? What do you want to say about it?
Well, I had never thought about it from that angle. And the wheels are still going. But it was really
Which good. Angle, Leslie?
I know I have to go back and read my comment. But what did I write up there?
Is it about the voters' right here in the U.S. in 1965?
No, before that.
Okay.
Just that amazing angle, paradigm shift, boom. Yeah. That one.
About the Magi. About being exclusive. I mean, the people that are the most exclusive. I was like, what? I mean, that is so true, but I never thought about it from that angle. Very good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
My brain hurts when I have to think too hard about stuff.
I know. Well, and here's why we're exclusive, because it scares us.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it in the comments. We're afraid, they, whoever they are, will come and take our jobs away. Or they will come and take our livelihood away, or they will come and be a threat to us. And what I want to say is, again, recognize how much anxiety is in all that. So rather than aligning our lives with Jesus, we're reacting out of our anxiety. And our anxiety says, well, the only way to be safe is to exclude people from our lives, not welcome them into our lives. Now, I want to acknowledge there might be threat. Okay. I mean, we don't know that all these people are good people. Just like there's threats among Christian people. Not all Christian, quote unquote, Christian people are good people, right? So, yeah, okay. I can
Ken, I just,
if I'm not careful.
I just want to say, Ken, every time I hear this kind of thing, and this is what our life's about, I just it brings freedom. When I went like this, it was just like raise the roof because there's so much room.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It just,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it brings life. And it's just sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I believe all that, Deborah. Thank you. Courtney?
Yeah, I agree. It's it is freeing. And as we get to think about an inclusive God. And what that means. I something that kind of got started for me as you were talking, Ken, and which is something that really kind of actually woke me up last night. I've been thinking about the Olympics that are starting right now, the Winter Olympics, mm-hmm. and obviously the problems that are stemming around them with the Uyghur people in the Western China, and that's really coming to light. And I just started thinking, like, we have this population of people that are, you know, are other, different, that are kind of being put into another place. And honestly, what kept me up last night was that I was like, before we put our hands up and be like, what on earth is happening? Why would you put a whole group of people in prison? I actually started thinking about race here, race in the US. And if I know someone posted about new Jim Crow, for example, I think, and that's all about how like black and brown bodies are being put in prison. And I mean, we do have a prison crisis in the US. I mean, I think you can draw some parallels between mm-hmm. the Uyghur people and black and brown people in the US, that the gang being locked up. We could say it's for different reasons, but it is fear based. It is other based. It is, we don't understand your culture based. And you know, it's that, I think it's brings it home a little bit. Cause I mean, it's easier for us to complain about mm-hmm. and be saddened by the Uyghur population right. being put in, but
right.
the US has been doing it for years. In my opinion, mm-hmm. In a different way. And we package it differently, mm-hmm. but I think the reason why the prison industry is an industry is because of similar fears of a different culture that we want to keep out of the right. Western European culture that is we want to hold dear in US society.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Courtney. I totally concur with you. And that's, so I'm going to go back to the Kleinberg study. The Kleinberg study, they do it every year. So every year they update their stats. And I need the latest stats. I don't have them. But they gave a date even where within each state. So they're in Texas. So they did Texas and then they did the rest of the country of when the number of immigrants will outnumber the white Europeans that are here. And that's what everybody's afraid of. Okay, what happens when we elect people of color to office and they lead us into places that we don't want to go? And unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever it is, the cat is out of the bag on that already. It happened 50 something years ago. And we're just living with the results of it. And so being anxious and trying to stop it now isn't going to work. But I hear you completely that we found a way to maintain that by incarcerating a lot of people of color.
Perhaps we wouldn't be facing this if we had been hospitable right from the beginning. We wouldn't mm-hmm. have to feel threatened because we would see everyone as us.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is, I just want to acknowledge it is hard. It's hard. That's a word for me. And it takes humility to to put yourself in another person's position and try to understand their culture from their perspective, because it's different. You know, I mean, from the way we wear our clothes, to the music we listen to the food we eat, to how we keep our yard up, you know, is culture. So.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, what I see so often at the root of exclusion is the need to protect, mm-hmm. and the emphasis on that. And I have to challenge myself about that, because I don't feel like I tend to be inclusive as a person, but I can't stop there, because if I look deeper, I go, what are the ways that I protect and that I emphasize the protection of whatever it may be, my comfort level, my you know, what I see as mine, the things I hold dear, you know, and I think Christ is continuously challenging us, because it's such a, you release and give up instead of protecting. But I find that that's a battleground. And so it takes ongoing sensitivity to that and release of that, because if I stop too soon, I can go, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, Ken. I get that. I've gotten that. But no, it runs deeper than that. And yeah.
So you're spot on. You're spot on. And even as I teach and talk about it, I mean, the first thing I have to do is say, okay, and where in my life am I still protecting me and my things and my way and my stuff? And I want to acknowledge that. That's in all of us. So that's the place, I think, where this connects to the idea. And Jesus constantly invites us to die to self. Okay, so give up protecting yourself. And I also want to acknowledge that what we're talking about is countercultural. So the majority culture is always about, okay, get together with your culture, protect yourself, be inhospitable, be exclusive, huddle up with just you. And all of that, for me, stems from anxiety. So we protect ourselves by huddling with people like us. That's why I like all y'all, because I feel like y'all are my people. And so I'm huddling with y'all. And even in this, what would it look like to hear from people that are different? So I just want to acknowledge that, yeah, I don't have this all figured out, and it's not working perfectly in my life either. So, Maggie?
Yeah, I just want to share with you that the other week I went to listen to a talk on Islamic culture and how we are engaging with them, or how we're not engaging with them, if you like. And this thing of fear, because it's so out of our box, and so we tend to be, you know, exclusive. We hold, as you just said, you know. But one of the scriptures that the gentleman that was speaking shared with us was John 4:4-26, about the Samaritan woman at the well. And I listened to this and I reflected on it, and I thought, so Jesus spoke to a Samaritan woman, and at the culture of the time, you know, that was taboo, you know. Not only did he speak with her, he went into the village. And he stayed there and he ate with them and he socialized with them. He allowed himself to engage, and they showed hospitality to him. And that would have been right outside the box as far as the, you know, the religion of the at the time. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm doing the faith walking modules. And so did Jesus step out of integrity? No, he didn't step out of integrity. Okay, so what did he do? So he moved his boundaries. Now, it might have been temporary, but he moved his boundaries. But why did he move his boundaries? Because he chose to differentiate. And he didn't have that fear. he had that curiousness, that curiosity that said, listen, I got something so much better for you. I'm not going to shove it down your throat, but I'm just going to sit with you in your midst and I'm going to let you taste of these living waters. So I just wonder what it's like, because some things that have come to my mind is, are we talking about when other cultures touch us, or are we talking about when we go and seek other cultures and we actually go and sit at their table? Do we go and sit at their table without fear, with no agenda, just to be the individual that God had made you to be? Before you do that, though, you know, you have to get rid of that fear. What are you fearful of? That they might try and change you, that they might try and impose things on you. But if your boundaries are set firm and you know who you are, then you can go and sit at tables. You can say, this is me, tell me about you. So these are the things that are getting stirred up. Saul made comment, I can't remember the words, but what got stirred up in me when Saul talked was about, and this also was part of the talk that I went to, was that we tend to listen as far as we are capable of listening, or our emotions will allow us to listen. And when we get too agitated, we stop and we say, oh yeah, that's the close of it now. Now I understand it. So when you stop that where you are at, you say, ah, I understand it. That's it. I don't need to listen anymore. But actually there's more, and your understanding isn't accurate, and it's maybe incorrect or maybe only a part of it. And we stop out of fear because, well, I know this is too deep for me, or this is taking me in a, you know. As usual, when I talk, it's not to challenge, it's just to say that's what got stirred up in me.
Thanks, Mags. Okay. That's really good. Really good. Thanks for that nice quick overview of faith walking principles, too.
Oh, God bless you. It works.
That was really good what you shared, Max. I love the comment that he moved his boundaries. I mean, that just really, to me, solidifies it, you know? It just really solidifies it. He took an action to go outside of his normal boundaries. One of the things that I think that I find is, I'm in not all cases, but in many cases, I'm able to remove my boundaries. The problem that I run into is relates again to the fear, which is, okay, now you're sitting at this table. how do you start the conversation, or what do you talk about, or you know, how to find, I mean, there's always a common place, I think, in all of us, even with different cultures, but it's that initial, like, oh, am I going to say the wrong thing, you know, this or that. And I think that's what stops, I think that's, well, I can only speak for myself. It can easily stop me or derail me, not derail me. Stops me, slows me down, or whatever. But it is something that I think it's my own insecurities. But I'm sure I'm not alone. I mean, anyway. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, and I think what you articulated for all of us is that all of our stories are similar, but all of our stories are unique, and all of us have our own anxiety. And it's how can we see our anxiety, recognize it as being anxiety, and then out of our best thinking, determine, and how do I want to show up in spite of my anxiety? It's good. Dawn?
Yeah, I
I appreciate everything that's been said. I just wanted to add, I think we highlight in our cultures people who are different as a group. So right now our president is saying, I'm going to appoint a Supreme Court nominee who is an African-American woman. But I look at that and say, well, what about the Asian population? Or, I mean, you know, pick it. And then I have friends who struggle with being overweight, or they grew up poor, or, you know, someone's elderly, or they've got some handicaps, disabilities, things like that, that make them feel like outsiders. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so, it's so tough to, you know, when we start identifying some of the overreaching inequalities and differences, mm-hmm. we're all in those boats. We all have ways that right. we feel like outsiders. And so it's just trying to get to a point where we see each other as people, and whatever our differences are, we just, yeah, we're not making distinctions because of our differences, but drawing close because of that we're people and we're loved by God.
Right. Absolutely, Dawn. It's a great reminder. Yeah. I mean, the stranger shows up in a lot of variety.
Yeah.
Deborah, you wanted to speak? Yeah.
Well, I did. This is just really thrilling to me to hear all of you guys speak. There are points in our ministry where we have become very discouraged because the church in our city hasn't moved forward very quickly in welcoming the 30% of our population that are of a different faith. So they're very hesitant and afraid. And when they think about even engaging with Muslims, even some church leaders here will say, well, we got to share doctrine with them. We have to do verbal proclamation. And we're always kind of moving under with this other tide of what if we go to the tables they set? Mm-hmm. How are we invited into their spheres, their homes, their lives? Mm-hmm. And we just listen and learn and enjoy them and recognize God is working in them, moving in them. Mm-hmm. And we can just be people of the kingdom.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say this is thrilling me, you mm-hmm. guys, because even just yesterday I faced a brick wall with a local church leader here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That all the reasons why we can't X, Y, or Z.
Right.
And that this, you're telling me that we have to tell people to do something else in addition to work. And we're like, we've been here 14 years saying, this is part of your lives.
Right.
Not an add-on.
Right.
You know? So is it okay that I just said that? That I, my heart is full of joy. And just reading what's in the chat. People mm-hmm. reaching out to Afghans. We're starting a mm-hmm. new work too at our church for Afghan women. And mm-hmm. I don't know.
So here's something that your comment, here's something that your comment stir in me, Deborah.
Sure.
As we live our lives, you said God is at work in them. And mm-hmm. and God is at work in us. And what if it's us that need converting and not them?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What if God is at work in us and God is wanting to convert us to something different than you know, I'm saying that with it. And so it requires humility to go and say, okay, and what does God have to teach me here in this relationship? Not what do I have to go teach them?
Yeah.
And for me, if we could do that, it's a beginning place.
That's exactly right. And are we willing to be teachable, sitting at their table, in their home?
Right.
And listen.
Well, Leslie Newbegin, who is kind of the father of the missional church movement and was a missionary, says that when we live missional lives, and I'm not going to quote him correctly, and I'm probably putting two or three quotes together, okay? So I just want to acknowledge that. But he says, we will grow in our understanding of what the gospel is as we live missional lives, and that the gospel keeps converting us as we go. And so the idea that we have it all figured out, we know it all, I've got this structure, is just, okay, am I open to God teaching me something that I didn't expect?
Yeah. With a new missionary in training in our course, he said to me at the end of the session I did last month, he said, what do you do when you have inside of you, you know, you have this ulterior motive. You have this thing that, you know, after all, you want to do this with them. And I just looked at him and went, I have to be honest that I don't have that.
Right.
I don't have that. So I don't know how to mm-hmm. address that.
Right.
In you, I just don't have this ulterior thing. I'm trying to get them somewhere. Yeah. Like, can yeah. I be changed? So mm-hmm. anyway, thanks for that. Exactly.
Trisha, I saw that finger.
Nice to see you all again. Two times
nice
in a row.
Seeing you.
But it won't be again. I don't think it'll be again for a while because babysitting starts again next week. But I just wanted to comment that several of my really close friends in Houston one was Sikh, the others were Hindu. And it's very important for them at all times, these particular ladies, to point out how their culture is superior to American culture. And the first couple of times I did that, I found myself very uncomfortable. I mean, it's like, ooh. But then we do that to other cultures, and it is an extremely uncomfortable position. So I decided I needed to stop and hear how superior their culture was to ours in just about every way from their mind. And in a lot of ways, it really was. It was really worth thinking about, very much worth thinking about. And I thought, I was sorry that when my son was born, I didn't open the Bible and randomly pick a thing in there and say, this is his name. It came to me from God. That's a nifty way to name a child. Instead of just saying, oh, well, we'll name it like a father or a grandfather. But I just thought that was neat because I had to let go of I had to be more humble and not think that my perspective was always it and allow them to show me where America was wrong in some, or American culture, Christian culture, what Texas culture was wrong in so many ways. And it was enlightening. And there are a lot of things they had to offer, very many things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great perspective, Trisha. I really appreciate you sharing that story. And that's it. It's, can I go with the spirit of humility? Good. So Mary and Joseph offered hospitality to the wise men from the East. They welcomed them into their home. So Mary and Joseph at the birth of Jesus modeled hospitality. Jerry, what are you thinking?
I the word that came to my mind is tribalism. Mm-hmm. How comfortable we are with our tribe.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we lock ourselves into that and it becomes this echo chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so destructive. And I find myself doing it though at times too, you know, even in small areas. For example, those anti-vaxxers, you know, what is wrong with them? Do you not read the data? Do you not, you know, where's your belief of science and, you know, all of this? And that's that's part of it. Remember a couple of weeks ago, you used the word, you had talked to a friend who had made the comment about the folks that aren't vaccinated. You used the word, help me out here.
What's recurring for me, or what I'm thinking is, we treat them like lepers.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you shut those people out, right?
Right. Sure.
I don't want what you want. I don't want what you have.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want to listen to your story, and I don't want to listen to your perspective. We become exclusive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we do that, so that's opened a whole new realm of this conversation, Jerry. But when we do that, when we shut the conversation down, and when we polarize like that, then there's no chance for dialogue. And when there's no chance for dialogue, then we just stay in our tribes, and we fight back and forth and throw spears back and forth and darts and verbal attacks back and forth. And I think that's where our country is here in the States, especially. That's all we do. And nobody's willing to sit down and say, okay, let's dialogue about this. Let's try to look at it from another's perspective. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Well, we're out of time. But wow, this has been good. Thank you all. Everybody okay? Anybody need to say anything before we go? To all of you listening on the podcast, we're glad you listen. Thanks for joining our conversation. And I hope you hear in all of this conversation that we hold all these things loosely. We hold it with humility. We're learners, but we're trying to learn together.